This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Good afternoon, Sean Dooley.
How are you, Warren?
I'm well, thank you. I know we normally have our little intro music for you, but in the panic, I couldn't find it. I was like a duck here with my feet going really fast underwater. How's that for a bird man?
Oh, very apt metaphor. Like, birds have infiltrated their way into our culture, really, in our language.
They have.
Like, I cannot help but speak, and people think I'm making bird puns deliberately, but it's just the way we speak. You know, you talk about flocking together or taking someone under your wing, and you know, you don't even realize that you're doing a bird pun, and people think it's all calculated, but no, I'm just 100% pure. No calculation here.
You know what, I was thinking, you're actually in Adelaide. You're at a bird photography conference. You must be seeing some absolutely beautiful photography there.
Yes, yeah, I was emceeing the Bird Life Photography Conference in Adelaide over the weekend, and then I'm speaking to Birds SA, which is the state-based bird group, tonight. And, yeah, just been overloaded with just stunning images of birds. It's amazing. And it was just galling too, because I've only started being a bird photographer in the last couple of years, and just with a very basic entry-level camera, but digital camera nonetheless, still not as expensive as the, you know, some of those lenses that they were selling at the conference were kind of like, you know, more than my mortgage repayments and for the year. and all these people with all this great equipment, and the week last Monday, I managed to drop my digital camera in a swamp.
Oh, so no.
It's totally cactus. So I was just weeping the whole time, seeing these amazing images that people were producing with this incredible gear, and knowing the best I could use at the moment is my phone.
Maybe the birds thought, you know what, if you're not going to do it properly, you're not doing it at all. One of them swooped you and pushed it in. I think it's, I'm looking forward to the Sean Dooley photography exhibition.
Well, I did present my my new upcoming pictorial book that I'm about to be published, which is called Fantastic. You Should Have Been Here Yesterday, which is shots of branches that birds were on before I got to take a photo of them. So just shots, lots of shots of empty branches and fields with a rock where a bird had been sitting.
Oh,
I think it'll be a bestseller.
It will be. I'm looking forward to that. We'll have to talk to you about that one. Now, on a serious note, you were in Tasmania for the Bruny Island Bird Festival. Just before we get into what we want to talk about with the swift parrots, what's the Bruny Island Bird Festival like?
That is one of the most fabulous events I've been to. Bruny Island, for those who don't know, is a large island, or North and South Bruny, connected by a little bit of land. They're quite large islands just south of Hobart. And so it's an island off an island off an island. And it's just one of the most beautiful places in Australia. The sort of main area where the festival was held is Adventure Bay, which is just absolutely stunning beach and beautiful blue gum and mountains in the background. And it's also one of the two most important sites in the world for breeding of critically endangered birds like the swift parrot and the 40-spotted pardalote. And the festival is just locals running it. They get hundreds of people coming down, and it's just full of good cheer, but also it sort of was tinged with a bit of sadness and anger. This year, the Tasmanian election was coming up. I did a panel speaking with Bob Brown and some wildlife experts, talking about the threats to those birds, the pardalote and the swift parrot in particular, and you know, what is happening down in Tasmania in terms of the forestry situation is just outrageous. That with the swift parrot, they're ironically named Sustainable Timbers, Tasmania, are still constantly logging, cutting down nesting trees and feeding trees for birds that are nesting nearby of swift parrots. And just to bring it all home, yesterday, a study was released by ANU taking a new analysis of the latest figures they have for every nesting swift parrot they've been able to locate over the last 10 years. And using genetics and other techniques, they've actually been able to give a very confident estimate of the world population of swift parrots. It's basically sitting on 500.
Oh, my goodness. And they're still chopping the trees down that they nest in.
Yeah, and also in New South Wales, where they have native forest logging on the south coast and the mid-north, they are still chopping forests that the swift parrots migrate to in winter and feed on. And there's a whole bunch of threats for swift parrots. There's a whole bunch of things that are killing swift parrots, but all of them are pretty much exacerbated by habitat loss and in particular by native forest logging that's destroying their breeding and feeding areas. And this 500 birds, to put it in context, when I was a little junior birder and started bird watching, we knew swift parrots were a bit rare, but there was still thought to be 8 to 10,000. When I did the big twitch 20 years ago, my epic around Australia bird watching adventure, we thought there were 2,000 swift parrots left. The latest estimate in the Action Plan for Australia's Birds, published in 2021, thought there were as few as 750. Now we know that that's at more closely going to be 500 birds, and that's totally in line with the population projections that have been modelled to show the decline of the bird. It's actually fitting frighteningly well, and those projections have the swift parrot essentially extinct in the wild by 2032. So we know this bird's going extinct right in front of our eyes.
We can stop
it's extinction
it.
In real time, but nobody's doing anything to stop it. The Tasmanian elections were held. In the election, the Liberal Party actually promised they would open up more areas that they had said they would protect for logging. The Labor Party didn't really make any stance on it at all, and the Greens did well, but it looks like the Liberals will form a coalition government. Probably not with the Greens, probably with the help of Jackie Lambie Party and some independents, but certainly nothing's going to happen out of Tasmania.
Is Jackie Lambie aware of it? Does she know?
She can, but she gets fired up about some weird things. So she can be brilliant and she can be very misguided. So it's kind of this tussle of who can get to her team first to say, look, the few heavily subsidised logging industry jobs that are being funded by this desecration of sacred forests, they may end up appearing more important to her than the fate of these species. But really, the main game is federally, because we have our nature laws that we have currently nationally are just ineffective, because by rights, all of that logging should have stopped more than 10 years ago when the bird was placed on the critically endangered list, because we knew what the threat was, and the legislation is there to, if there's a threat, you address that threat to protect the threatened species. However, our nature laws are so useless and have no teeth that there's actually a clause in our current nature laws and in the regional forest agreements that said if there's a threat to a critically endangered species, we need to address it unless that threat is logging. And then we play by different rules. And so that's why we're really at, Tanya Plibersek, the National Environment Minister, who's doing a review of the main threatened species legislation, which is the EPBC Act, really been working, trying to work with her, but also give her, frank and fearless advice, saying, look, this has to change. And the signs were good early on. As it's progressing, BirdLife Australia is in there and seeing some of the proposals for the proposed legislation, and they're starting to worry us. So It's a really delicate situation now for the swift parrot because it's hurtling towards extinction. And
it's sad. And it's, you know, like you said, we could stop it. It's not like it's out of, we can't, it's just inevitable. We could stop it. And why do we need to log native forests? I mean, there's plenty of places we could plant timber and there's plantations. There's all sorts of things. We do not need to log native forests.
No.
It's ridiculous.
No, we've stopped it now in Victoria and Western Australia. But New South Wales and Tassie are just recalcitrant on this. And the irony is they put forward all these economic arguments is that the forest industry in New South Wales, and I think the same in Tasmania, is a profitable industry that the plantation side of the industry actually props up the native timber logging, which runs at a loss of tens of millions of dollars every year.
So why are they doing it for 10 jobs or something? Is that the reason?
Yeah, it seems to be part of the culture wars. There are a few hundred jobs around the country that are dependent on it. But, we know the situation in New South Wales, they actually can't get enough timber cutters to cut the native forests for their logging for their contracts, so they're actually getting crews up from Tasmania and Victoria to do it. So it is just madness. It's economic madness, but it's willful, just willful action in the face of so much common sense. So it's incredibly frustrating and angering, but incredibly saddening as well. And so many people have worked so hard to try and save the swift parrot, but it really is like without these strong nature laws that can protect them properly, it's like playing a game of snakes and ladders. Like you fix one threat in one spot, move ahead three steps, then they cut down some breeding habitat, move back 10, and it's just, we're just continually going backwards.
Let's all write to Tanya Plibersek, and I reckon someone needs to get into the ear of Jackie Lambie as well and say, hey, get fired up over this, because I like it when she gets fired up over something, and this would be great. This would be something worthwhile. Sean, before we let you go, because I know you're still in Adelaide, just something really quickly and positive to end the conversation of. Our producer, Con, read an interesting article in New Scientist about how birds make an after-you gesture to prompt their mate to enter the nest. I think it's a Japanese bird that does it.
Yes, this is one of those things where when I read it, I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense. I reckon I've seen that. As birds do make like that, they do communicate with things other than their bills. Like they can display, even the crested pigeon that people might know, the punk pigeons with the black spike on the top of their head. If people might know, when they fly off, they make a whistling noise, and that's not with their mouth, that's actually with their wing, and they have a sort of notch in the wing. And what the crested pigeon does is the loudness of that whistling noise reflects the extent of the danger, how big the threat is. So if it gets a fright and, like, say, a cat jumps out or something and it flies off, that whistle will be really strong and that will alert all the other crested pigeons that there's danger in the area. So birds do communicate through different parts of their body, and that wing fluttering, you see it with chicks and also in some courtship displays where the birds are trying to either beg for food or show that they're, ready for mating, that sort of thing. So this study showing the bird was called the Japanese tit, and they nest in a little hollow in the tree or a nest box. And the researchers filmed them going into nest boxes and when they're feeding the chicks, and when the male or the female, who both feed the chicks, would go by themselves, they just go straight in and wouldn't do this little wing shimmy. But when the two of them arrive together with food, in about 40% of the cases, the female would shimmy her wings and the male would then go in to the into feed the chicks.
So
and
she's not bending her wing female, as if to say, like on the cartoon, after you, and pointing to the thing.
That seems to be the
really? So it's the conclusion. The point.
Yes. No, after you. But they, and because when she didn't shimmy her wings, the male that she would go in first, but there was something about, she'd stop and she'd say, no, after you, mate. Maybe she looked and saw that the male had more bugs in his beak or something like that for the chicks. And well, maybe she was just, I don't want to deal with the kids at the
that's
moment
what it
you
is.
Go in there.
That's what I think it is. Sean, great to chat with you. Let's hope we get some action happening on the Swift Parrot as well. We'll let you get back to your commitments in Adelaide.
Thank you. Thank you. And I reckon every time, if you ever play a Taylor Swift song, I want all your listeners to think immediately of the Swift Parrot.
Okay. Because, yes.
You know, that's a good reminder.
She would get, Taylor Swift would sort it out, I reckon. Let's get Taylor Swift onto it. Let's write her an email.
Oh, we have tried. We have tried. if you've got a personal line, then we'd love to
we'll
know.
We'll get our music people onto it. Sean, great to chat with you. We'll talk to you again next month.
Okay, thank you, Warren.
That is Sean Dooley, the Public Affairs Manager, National Public Affairs Manager at BirdLife Australia.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.